Welcome to Rewilding Love. This season is with a couple on the brink of divorce.
This is episode 13, Relationship on the Rocks.
The conversation ended with us laughing and giggling.
My goodness me, it's been quite the roller coaster ride.
What I'm hearing is that you're not taking things as personally. If he gets snappy, you're able to see, well, that's his state of mind in the moment.
It would appear that the sheen of wisdom has not worn off yet from their experience at the intensive.
It's been very peaceful and very calm.
That's what happens when we spend more time experiencing our true nature, allowing ourselves to be rewilded by it. We get into the feeling of well-being and those deeper feelings of love and compassion, and anything that's not that all of a sudden becomes a whole lot less tolerable to us.
Honest Angus, like, no, she's a pain in the ass. I'm much better at, like, dealing with it.
Someone's got themselves into a low mood. He's hit the cliff face and he's tumbling.
I'm chill as a cucumber on the outside. Inside, I'm as hot as a tamale.
I'm experiencing a certain amount of befuddlement around this idea of listening to this space. You are listening to Rewilding Love with me, Angus Ross.
And me, Rohini Ross.
Rewilding Love is a podcast about relationships.
We believe that love never disappears completely in relationships. It can always be rewilded. Listen in as we guide a real couple back to their natural state of love.
Relax and enjoy the show.
We're excited to let you know that we're going to be doing some Ask Anything podcast episodes. And so we'd love to hear from you if you have any questions about the podcast, about relationships in general, or any other questions that you'd like us to answer. We'd love for you to send them in. And so you can send them in via email to info@therewilders.org. Or if you'd like to send in your question anonymously, you can call your question in to 424-272-6497. That's 424-272-6497.
Okay, well, that's another intensive in the bag. I wonder how they'll get along in the big wide world.
We now have two fledgling rewilders out there.
We do.
I think it's important to talk about the intensive experience just to give it some context in terms of where they're at in their journey. And so the reason why we have intensives in a retreat setting is because we recognize that when people get out of their day-to-day lives and don't have those pressures on them, they tend to relax. Their minds tend to settle quite quickly. And in that space, it's just natural that the feelings of well-being and joy naturally come to the surface and are felt more clearly.
Yeah, there's a method to our madness for sure. I have heard it said in various trainings that we've done, and certainly in couples workshops or intensives, where people will get up and share, a couple will get up and share, and they will lament the fact that they wish that their relationship could be how it is when they're on vacation and they're on holiday, because they get on like a house on fire under those circumstances and those conditions, which is more grist for the mill as far as we're concerned, because that just demonstrates that it's all about state of mind. So when they're in a relaxed and settled state of mind, they do get on like a house on fire and they have perspective. And when they get out there into the big wide world and get sped up and unsettled, as the case may be, as far as their state of mind is concerned, then they lose that perspective. So we are actually doing everything in our power to create a setting where all of that analytical machinery has plenty of room to slow down. And we try and engineer a settled state. And that's where we have the leverage that we're looking for to get that couple to a place of, how would I articulate this? Because I want to also be cognizant of the fact that we want to not have an agenda, but in terms of helping that client or the client see what they need to see, it's much better that they be in a settled state of mind. So we're doing everything that we can to create that state.
Yeah, I don't know that I would use the word engineer because that sounds a lot more contrived.
I knew you were going to pick me up on that. I tried to reel it back in.
Too late.
You wouldn't let me.
I heard it. It didn't slip by me.
I fell off that cliff ever so swiftly.
Rather than engineering, we set up a context that allows the natural state to come forward. How's that?
Yeah, that'll do for me.
Okay.
What she said.
And so it's amazing how quickly shifts can happen in the couples work that we do in an intensive setting and the individual intensives that we each do. It's really wonderful to see how flexible the mind is and how flexible we are that we can drop out of our thinking and come back to our natural state so easily. And as you've heard through listening, Mateo and Alicia are in an incredible space at this point in time. Mateo can't even imagine getting into the conflicts that they were having as he was leaving the intensive.
Yeah. Dare I say, he might be guilty of getting a little bit cocky about what the future held in store for him.
And we're not going to pop their bubble because we don't know. It could be a really smooth sailing ride, and sometimes it is, but often after intensives, why we have the follow-up sessions is we recognize it can be a bumpy reentry at times.
Yes, it can be a bumpy reentry at times. And I know that we want to do our best to send our couples off in a good feeling. But I think it is important to be aware of the fact that there may be a few hiccups, bumps in the road. And I do think that he was guilty of being a little bit cocky, a bit full of himself as far as that's concerned. And I was thinking as I was listening to you use this phrase, what was it, bumpy road or bumps along the way? I thought of a good metaphor here. And I don't know if you remember seeing that documentary. It was a David Attenborough documentary. And I think the name of the bird, I think it was called a barnacle goose. And they nest somewhere up in the Arctic Circle, and they choose to nest on the side of this cliff face, and I think it's about 400 feet up in the air. And that when the goslings, as it were, they are called goslings, baby geese, when they decide to spread their wings and fly, I think it would appear that that decision is somewhat premature because their wings, to say the least, look pretty embryonic in their nature. And judging on the size of their body, the wings look pretty tiny. Nevertheless, they jump out the nest. They're 400 feet in the air and they begin this process of, you couldn't really call it gliding. You have to say it's basically falling. And for the first 300 feet, they're doing pretty well, remaining a fairly sort of stable descent until that is, of course, until they hit the side of the cliff, at which point they start tumbling down and bumping down. And, you know, eventually they reach the bottom and the music is so sinister that you think that they've met an untimely end. And then there's this horrible pregnant pause where I guess the parents come to see how the... I guess to see the dead body of their dearly departed offspring. And lo and behold, the chick comes to life and just sort of like, you know, shakes itself down. At which point you suddenly hear the very dulcet tones of David Attenborough's voice in a grossly underestimated assessment in terms of the gravitas of the situation. You hear him say, "The chick, somewhat dazed and confused, springs back to life." Which is really, to be honest, I don't know how any creature could tumble down in that way and somehow live to tell the tale. Anyway, this is a very long, verbose way of making a point around Alicia and Mateo's experience where, yeah, I guess Mateo can be forgiven for his overconfidence. And I guess for me, the gosling's initial leap out of the nest, somewhat reminiscent of Mateo's overconfidence in that situation. But I do feel like part of the journey in doing these intensives is we hopefully allow our clients to experience their innate resilience. So That overconfidence was Mateo, like that chick leaping out of the nest. It was him tapping into his innate resilience. He was perhaps not thinking about the possible bump on the way. And in a sense, I hope he doesn't meet any of those kind of bumps to the extent that that poor chick did. But nevertheless, that's a possibility. But I do feel like that confidence that he's experiencing, and I think for Alicia too, that is very much a part of the journey. That when they do settle, when they do come back into their into that state of innate well-being, then that sense of resilience and self-confidence for what the future holds in store emerges. And it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, hopefully the intensive experience has given them a reference point. So even if things do get difficult, if they get stirred up, if they demonstrate some of the old behaviors, they have a reference point that's known to them. It's experiential. And they will remember that it's possible to get back to the space that they're in currently. And when they have hope for that and when they know it's possible, they're much more likely to find ways to look in that direction that will allow themselves to get back there.
Yeah, I use that term reference point all the time, to get a good reference point so that you'll have something to look to when things are starting to get out of hand. So in a sense, a retreat or an intensive, the intensives that we provide are really one big glorious reference point in terms of how we guide them back to their essential nature. We guide them back to their wisdom. We guide them back to their innate resilience. And then in having that experience, that's something that they can draw on when life starts to look a little bit difficult or their state of mind has gone south. Hopefully they will remember, well, hang on a minute, on the intensive, much in the same way all those people would say, yeah, when we were on holiday, we get on like house on fire. They say to themselves, look, when we're doing that intensive, we suddenly found ourselves looking through new optics and life looked entirely different. And so that reference point is going to be invaluable moving forward. And they will forget it. They will forget about it from time to time, as do we all. But the growth for them, as it is for us all, is how quickly we bounce back and remember what exactly is going on. And it's just really down to a state of mind thing. And that's just informing our reactivity. Our behavior, our response is always going to be a reflection of our state of mind. So having that reference point is going to be something that's going to be really useful for them moving forward.
And I want to point out that we all have our reference points, that this isn't just about Alicia Mateo, that this is something that's universal, that every single one of us has a reference point for what peace of mind feels like. Every single one of us has a reference point for knowing what we're like when we're not in a reactive state. Everyone knows what it's like when they're in a good feeling versus when they're all stirred up and reactive. And so when we recognize that that's a reflection of our mood fluctuating and not about our circumstances, we can really look in the direction of how to take care of ourselves so that we can let our state of mind settle. And then we come back naturally to that place of well-being inside. And that is such a game changer for life in general, but for relationships especially. Because when we know that when the relationship feels difficult, that that's a reflection of our state of mind, it's going to stop us from behaving in ways toward our partner or toward other people in our life that actually make things a lot harder to get along.
Yeah. As you're talking, it makes me wonder about all those occasions where we get asked about how do we find our way back to that settled state of mind. And I guess I'm guilty as much as the next person of trying to figure out, well, how do I do that? And I think that why the reference point idea is so valuable is it's not about there being a technique to it. It's about there being a state of awareness of realizing that this is just my state of mind, and that's why I'm suffering in this situation. I'm putting thoughts on this state of mind, and I'm getting on board that train of thought, and it's not really taking me anywhere that I really want to go at this point in time, however compelling it may be. But just to have that awareness and have that reference point means that what I'm really ultimately doing is finding a way to be present in this current situation with whatever's going on and not taking it personally. And so it's taking on the role of an observer rather than a role of the character in that virtual reality that unfolds in that state of mind. I kind of remove myself from the thinking of that state of mind through awareness. And I think that that's something to expand into, and wonderful to have a reference point and realize, yeah, this is something that I can look at and explore here when I feel like I'm struggling.
So for everybody, just knowing the difference between being in a good state of mind versus not being in a good state of mind, that's really the simplicity of this. When we know the difference, we know how to act accordingly, and life gets a whole lot easier.
Yeah, sure does.
And so we're going to hear from Alicia next, and she is very optimistic about how things are going and feels very hopeful. So let's hear what she has to say.
What I'm hearing is that you're not taking things as personally. If he gets snappy, you're kind of able to see, well, that's his state of mind in the moment. You don't have to sort of react to that. So does that mean that, because I remember you saying that things would escalate before, does that mean things aren't escalating now?
Nothing has escalated.
Oh, that's great. Well, that's significant then. That's really huge.
Yeah, not one like argument, not really like a disagreement, like agree to disagree moment. It's more so like, it's been very peaceful and very calm and very like, the weekend after our therapy session, he had gone with his buddy for the day to go snowboarding, and he was very communicative with me and checking in. And then I just like let him do his thing. And so we've like had our moments like separate and had it together. And like I said, nothing's really like triggered either of us. Triggered me.
Right.
The things that I've like really looked at have been like him being more affectionate and like wanting to help and offset any like household chores.
So she seems to be in a good place. It would appear that the sheen of wisdom has not worn off yet from their experience at the intensive. No, it's that sounds very hopeful.
Yeah, I was really pleased to hear that the volatility had shifted and that had sustained itself. So that to me was significant for both of them.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. Long may it last.
And next we'll hear from Mateo, and he actually is really excited about how the impact of the understanding is helping him at work.
So it was really funny though, like I took what we learned, moving aside from my relationship, I took what we learned and I, you know, met with my sales team and just like trying to get like their pulse, like, you know, what things are you guys dealing with, you know, and all this stuff. And, you know, I just saw that they were like paralysis by analysis type stuff. And they would already know how the conversation was going and all that stuff. And they felt that they could talk to anyone and everyone had the same pain points and stuff like that. And I just totally told them, dude, get rid of any preconceived ideas that you have. I don't want you to do anything other than ask questions on a phone call, really get to know people, not just qualify them, but understand their pain points. I don't care how you sell, but the first 3 to 5 minutes of your conversation should really be focused about the other person on the phone. And the reason you do that is to first get to know them, build some rapport, but also to get rid of this story that you already have in your head, and, you know, be able to approach, you know, a sale with a clean slate, and not think that every sale is exactly, you know, a cookie.
Yeah.
And fuck, man, these kids have been closing accounts right.
Nice. That's
insane.
Awesome.
Insane.
That's very cool.
Okay, this is where it really gets crazy. So one of my sales kids, he's like 24 years old. It's got a lot of good potential, but he is one of these really quick to respond, right? Doesn't fully think it out, just like quicks to respond. Again, I don't know why, but ever since we had that conversation, he pauses. He pauses and he thinks about what he's about to say and he processes everything. Still a really smart kid, processes it. And he's like, okay, I hear. But it used to be very combative, like, oh, yeah, yeah, but this is how we used to do it where I was before. Right now, he's like digesting it and being like, okay, what do you think about this? Right? Like, but see, he's fucking thinking for once. And I was like, holy shit, it's like this fucking guy. So I'm very thankful. I'm applying this in my work. And
that's great. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Really cool.
It's interesting when people are impacted by what we share, it doesn't necessarily touch the issue that they're wanting it to touch right away. It often will go to other areas of life where it's more easily integrated and understood. And that's what I hear here with Mateo. I hear that he sees this very clearly at work. He recognizes now the value of presence, the value of listening deeply, the value of connecting human to human and having that reflective state of mind where you can listen to the deeper knowing or common sense and have that be what is the compass point for work. And so I think it's really a beautiful description that he gives as to how he's been impacted and how he's now sharing this with his team.
Yeah, and how excited he is about how he's seeing the fruits of sharing this understanding really starting to ripen and proliferate. And I think, yeah, you're absolutely right. And we see this all the time. And we have the luxury of perhaps, you know, we do relationship work and that's something that we're particularly fond of doing, but we have also done quite a bit of corporate work as well. And we've also had situations where people in the corporate field are seeing how this has really helped them at home in their relationship. Because mm-hmm. we're talking about relationship right across the field. So this understanding is very universal at this level. And so all of those qualities are very apropos in a corporate setting, just as much as they are at home with one's significant other.
Well, there's no area of life that isn't impacted by our state of mind and by having an understanding of how to navigate the human experience of having moods that go up and down, having a mind that is more expansive at times, more closed to others. When we know how to navigate that more gracefully, it makes all areas of life more easy.
Yeah, and really, at the end of the day, how to be genuinely present with another human being,
yeah.
To really relate to someone at that level. That's what he's seeing in his workforce, and that's what's been helping his marriage too.
Absolutely. Well, we'll hear from Alicia now, and she's even saying that they're navigating the bumps fairly well too.
Actually, really funny. We did have one conversation mm-hmm. where I scaled back from it because I saw it was going to a bad kind of mm-hmm. discussion. It was about finances. Mm-hmm. And he had called me and he was definitely in a low mood about it. And he was just like upset about like paying some bills or whatever. And he almost wanted to play like the blame game on me. And I remember like being like, you know what? I really do want to talk to you about this, but I'm not really in the state of mind to be able to effectively like chat with you about it. I was like, I kind of lied. I was like, I'm just in a little bit of a bad mood from work. So like, I don't want it to transpire to this. Cause I could already tell he was getting like antsy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, but I do want to sit down and let's map everything out and we'll do it together and this and that. I was like, but I really don't think it's a time for a conversation right now. And he kept like trying and trying. And I was like, I'm going to have to let you go. Like, I can't have that conversation now. I just don't want it to go there. I was like, I just have to get through some other stuff. And, the conversation ended with us laughing and giggling on the other end and never really like looking at the stuff later on. But I think it was just because he was angry that one of his bills was probably more than what he had thought it would be for the month.
Right, right, right. So he was kind of upset about that, not anything really to do with you.
Well, yeah, that's fantastic, isn't it? She's very much the model student of this understanding now. And she was able to not take the bait. It was obviously a significant test in that respect. And I love the fact that it ended up with them laughing about, you know, whatever they were laughing about, they were able to get to that place and not take that situation personally or seriously. And yet here is provided another wonderful reference point to move forward and realize, yeah, these are not the times to perhaps have a conversation when our state of mind has gone south, even when our partner is doing everything in their power to pull us in and do exactly that. So good for her.
Yeah, good for her. And for me, this is one of the key pieces for people to really hear in terms of having more relationship happiness. If we could all get better, and I'll include myself in the we, if we could all get better at not trying to work things out when we're in a low mood and have the patience to wait and revisit when we're in a better state of mind, so much suffering would be diminished.
And it's so hard to do, isn't it? Because it can feel so compelling. It is trying to sort of get to a place of neutrality, sort of disengage from the cogs and gears of our analytical machinery, which is desperate to find some quick solution to what looks like an enormous problem. And yet it's in that space of neutrality where we recapture perspective and more than likely easily find a solution.
Well, I think what happens is when we're in emotional suffering, our instinctual brain tells us to get rid of the suffering as quickly as possible. So that's why we feel compelled to try and work it out. But if we can understand that the feelings will just come and go, they don't do anything to us, they don't harm us in any way. And if we can get better at having an open space within ourselves to just allow feelings to move through us, then we're not going to react to them, we're not going to react from them, and they pass so much more quickly.
Yeah, and I think again, doesn't it boil back down to presence? The presence to understand that there is this intense pull towards the analytical mind that wants to think things through and achieve a result as quickly as possible on that end. And it does feel counterintuitive to sort of look towards space and neutrality. And yet that's where all the goodies are. That's where we will hopefully have a hunch or a piece of intuition, an instinct that will offer us a new way to approach what looks like an impossible situation.
Yeah, and Alicia's doing really well with that.
Yeah, she is.
Mateo, on the other hand, he might have finished his soaring piece of coming down.
Yeah, it had mountain to happen.
Let's hear what he has to say.
Okay.
How can I put it? It's a lot less weight in the relationship, but I mean, there's still shit that pisses me off. Honest, Angus, like, no, she's a pain in the ass. I am much better at like dealing with it, but that's where I'm at right now is, you know, I could deal with it before. Now I deal with it, you know, in a different way where it's, again, less weight. But I mean, the negativity shit still comes into the household. And I mean, she tries to spark the conversations that way. And I just don't talk. I'm just like silent. You know, like I was doing the dishes the other night and she said something along the lines because she was going in for a review or something. And all she wants to do is me tell her like her review is going to go all right. But I've already done that like 10 times. Right. I'm like, you've got this. Like, you know, you're so valuable to your team members and your company. Like it's all going to go well. Well, fuck, it was the 10th time. And she said it underneath her breath. Towards me, she wanted me to obviously. I just kept doing the dishes. I was like, I'm gonna pretend like I didn't even hear her shit. I'm just, you know, I'm just washing the dishes. But that's the problem, is that like, I don't want to live my life like that. I want to live my life with not someone that I'm gonna be compatible all the time with, but like 80%. That'd be nice. That'd be a good shot, you know.
Someone's got themselves into a low mood. he's crossed over to the other side, isn't he? He's lost his bearings.
He has.
He's hit the cliff face.
He's tumbling.
And he's tumbling.
And he doesn't think he's tumbling.
Not at all. No idea. Yeah. And his feathers are definitely ruffled.
They're not quite big enough to carry his body yet.
They're not quite big enough to carry his body yet. We let him jump out the nest way too soon.
Well,
that's why we're here, isn't it? That's why we do the follow-up.
Exactly. That's why there's the tumble.
Yeah.
But you speak to him about a lot of this, and you do speak to it in a lot of different ways, and I'm not going to share all of the different ways that you tried to remind him of what was discussed in the intensive. But in this next section, all of a sudden, you understand that he's dealing with anxiety, and in quite a significant way.
Okay. I'd forgotten about that, so I'm looking forward to hearing what I said.
Yeah, I mean, to the point where it's true, like, the anxiety is real, and I do get it once I get home, and I get these chest pains, and even so much so that I initially had made an appointment to go meet with the cardiologist, because I had 3 EKGs, they all come back normal, but there's something there. I don't know if it's anxiety. I don't know what it is, but I really want to, like, nip it in the bud and figure something out here.
So hang on a minute. I mean, we've got a little, you know, I'll go on a little bit more. But so on one hand, you're saying you're super chill when you get home. And now you're telling me you're having chest pains because of you perceive as probably anxiety.
I am super chill. Like, when I come home, I'm a blank slate. And then when she starts running and bulldozing me, I'm still chill. But in here, I'm like...
Oh, so you're external, on the external, there's the appearance of chill, but inside you're not feeling chill.
Oh, yeah. I'm chill as a cucumber on the outside. Inside, I'm as hot as a tamale.
I'm sorry. That's a pretty internal phrase. I love it. Well, that's something we got to work on.
But I think what you said is being able to acknowledge when you do start feeling that way and letting your partner know, like, hey, I'm starting to fucking get, you know, I'm starting to, like, pant over here like a hot dog. Like, I can't, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely, 100%. Because she can't, how is she going to, if you're like, maybe you're just like got a great poker face and she's like, going off 19 to the dozen, trying to sort of get some sort of some sort of connection going, which obviously she's getting more sped up as time wears on. That connection, she's like, it's like someone hanging on for like just for dear life, trying to find that life ring to connect with you, and you're like deadpan. She's got no read on what's going on, so she's just going to come at you with all guns blazing.
Yeah, it's like I'm a lifeguard and she's like, save me, and she's drowning me at the same time.
Yeah, but you're kind of like, you're an indifferent like lifeguard, because on the surface you look like, oh yeah, I got this all under control, but inside you're kind of going, oh my God, what the fuck's happening? She's gonna drown and she's gonna pull me down with her.
Yeah, that's why they have those things they made on plastic, you go, bah! And then you...
So in a sense, it's kind of like, yes, absolutely, 100%. Then the more you let her know that I am feeling like, I don't know how you articulate, and you do it in a way that's as neutral as you can be in that situation, but I am starting to feel anxious about this conversation. It's making me feel anxious. That would probably be quite refreshing for her to hear. And I would imagine she'd be like, oh, well, that's interesting. And it's kind of like, that allows her to look at herself. That allows us like, kind of like, maybe have a look at how she's showing up.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I brought it up to her too, that I had made an appointment for a cardiologist, and she was like, what? Like, why? I'm like, because I feel like I'm going to die like a lot of the time. So I feel, yeah.
I mean, if you've got to hold that all in, that takes its toll.
No shit, Angus.
This is an important thing to look at. And holding it all in is you like keeping this like cool facade going, like I've got my shit together. And that in itself is putting you under a lot of pressure.
Yeah, I'm not doing it to pretend like I got my shit together. I'm doing it so I don't just tell someone to shut the fuck up. Like,
well, that's just another way of like keeping your shit together.
Yeah, I guess. It's just, but I'm not like trying to do it to like put off like, oh, I'm so superior and I'm so enlightened.
Yeah, I know, but there's a sort of like, I know that, I can see that your motives are honorable, but in a sense, there's an element of dishonesty about it that's not really healthy for you to like, in the sense of your physiology, that's not healthy for you to like be walking through your life and like having to pretend to be something that you're not.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so that's what I'm trying to sort of like, the point I'm trying to make is the more you can transparently talk about your your anxieties or whatever, but in a way where you feel like, yeah, I want to be able to have this conversation, but I want to have it in a settled way. I don't want to have it now because I'm feeling a little tweaked or a little anxious.
Yeah, so can we say that like in the the retreat that we did, there was two parts where it was one internal here, but then the other one was how we communicate with our partner and when we're not feeling well. So I've done really well with the controlling of here and not going down these tunnels, but I haven't yet practiced, actually talking to my partner about, you know, this exact thing of like, hey, I don't feel comfortable in here, I'm getting anxiety, or hey, I feel that you're, you know, on a different level. We haven't done that.
Yeah, I would be a keen advocate for having that conversation, but my one caveat is to ensure to the best of your ability that you have that conversation when you're both neutral. And you can even talk about, you can even set it up that way. So you're like, you know, for this conversation to take place, we need to be neutral. And as soon as one of us gets out of balance, then we need to disengage.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. And it's a good day to do that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I do feel that I've made strides here, but yeah, I haven't practiced actively, you know, communicating this stuff with her.
Well, that's a bit of a turn up, isn't it?
What does that mean? People might not understand what that means. Please explain. Well,
I should have seen it coming. You know, we worked together for four.
No, but where's that expression from? That's a bit of a turn up.
That's a bit of a turn up.
You're not saying it's a bit of a turnip.
No, I'm not saying it's a bit of a turnip.
What are you saying?
A turn up. Well, something turned up. Something turned up that was unexpected.
Got it.
I guess that's the abbreviated version of it.
Got it. Okay.
It's a bit of a turn up, isn't it? As opposed to a turn out.
Well, it was quite funny when you finally realize that he's only cool as a cucumber on the outside.
I know. I guess I'm a bit of the remedial student of this understanding in that respect. It took me a while to figure that out.
It just shows how strong that veneer is with him.
Yeah. I mean, to the extent that he's dealing with heart palpitations or having to have an EKG, that's pretty serious stuff. So obviously it's really affecting his physiology, having to bottle that all up.
Yeah. So there's two pieces here. He spoke to how he's going to be more transparent with Alicia about his internal experience, which I think would be huge. And the second piece, though, is it's really going to be important for him to have a different relationship with his thinking so that he doesn't have that level of anxiety.
Yeah, and I guess should have seen the telltale signs when I had to use whatever I had at my disposal, whatever means I chose to share with him, what I felt would be of service to him understanding that he creates his own experience. And obviously he did have some moments of insight, it would appear, around that. He's kind of reverted back to type. And yeah, there again are the bumps on the cliff face that he's facing. He's up against his old patterns of habitual behavior.
Yeah, but you have a good conversation with him and you give him he gets some perspective from it. And I think we should just speak a little bit, though, in general about anxiety and how that impacts relationships. Because I would say that whenever relationships are challenging, there's usually some form of insecurity or anxiety present, wouldn't you say?
I would say 100%, yeah, perhaps all of the time. And again, it boils down, and I'm going to sound like a scratch record, maybe everything boils down to this. It boils down to a lack of presence. It boils down to a disconnection that's born out of someone's mind going elsewhere and not being present in the relationship. And anxiety is an easy train to get on in that respect, and can be a total blind spot. And I have encountered many a client who have started a coaching experience, let's say, and be in complete denial about the fact that they are suffering from anxiety. What? I don't experience anxiety. I'm not an anxious person. And then sometime later, that's something that they become aware of. Wow, I never knew I was anxious. So it is a total blind spot, a blind spot for so many people.
Yeah. Why?
Because I misspoke and I said it was a blind bot, I think.
Well, even it was a blind spot for you, wasn't it?
It was a blind spot for me, certainly, when we got together. I think I had a tremendous amount, and we've spoken about this too, I had a tremendous amount of judgment for what was evidently your anxiety, which to me was, you know, depression is another word that we can use as a label for anxiety.
Well, I think they're a slightly different flavor, but I had both.
Yeah, but they're in the same food group.
Okay.
But I had a lot of judgment for your anxiety. Okay, we'll call it anxiety. And that was a total projection because it took me a long time to realize, yeah, you know what? I am actually fundamentally quite an anxious person deep down. And I took a lot of my thinking very seriously and got quite crippled by it on many an occasion. But I couldn't tolerate it in you because I couldn't tolerate it in myself. And it was unbearable to deal with, and probably why that was an area of some significant conflict between us.
And I think that's exactly the same thing that's going on with Mateo. He doesn't know how to be with his own experience. And so it's a blind spot to him. But Alicia's talking to him, it seems. I don't really quite know what she's doing that's so terrible. He basically wants her to just zip
it. She's basically breathing.
But that sets him off the edge.
Yeah.
He can't tolerate any kind of emotional demonstration that she shows because he's so close to that going over. I mean, it sounds like he's having panic attacks.
Can I talk about your habit of picking your fingers?
Yes, you may talk about that habit.
So Rahini has this habit of picking her fingers, her cuticles, her fingers. And I can tolerate that. It's actually, in actual fact, it's a sort of perfect weather vane for my state of mind. Because if I am in a good state of mind, I couldn't care less, basically. She picks her fingers or not, she can chew her hand off for a while.
That's not very nice.
No, I'm kidding. But if I am feeling uptight or anxious, I cannot bear it. It's like scraping a chalk across a blackboard. It's just unbearable to me. But it's because I'm anxious and it's just a reminder of my anxiety, although I'm not necessarily conscious of it. The fact that you are anxious enough to pick your fingers, it just really highlights my own anxiety without really being aware of it. And yet, so I have absolute refusal to accept it, that behavior in you, because I can't tolerate it in myself. Classic projection 101, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so for me, this is huge that he got to the place of owning that he has anxiety and that he sees that. And that part of the equation, as the two of you discuss here in this segment, is being able to be more vulnerable and transparent about that in his relationship with Alicia. And the second part is for him to be on the learning curve of seeing how he engages with his anxious thinking and how that's the source of his anxiety.
Yeah, I mean, evidently we are getting to a deeper level of growth and learning that maybe didn't show up in the intensive. And that's what's so good about doing the follow-up work, because these things have a tendency in the real world to appear. And I think that we have hopefully helped them get to a higher level of understanding that has maybe allowed them to unearth some of these things.
Yeah. And the next time you speak with them, the next clip is from the next session, things had dramatically shifted for him.
Yeah, let's see.
Things are way better than the last time we spoke. I think it was just I was missing that whole piece of the pie where you can openly talk with your partner and be like, hey, right now is not the time, right? So it's pretty cool. Everything's been good. On Friday, we had our 7th year anniversary of when we started dating. So we had a fun weekend. I went to dinner. The next night, we did a pasta making class. The next day, went to the beach, went surfing. And
fantastic. That sounds great.
Yeah. I'm really excited, and it's been really, really awesome lately. And I'm being thankful isn't enough. You know what I mean?
So one might be inclined to believe, based on Matteo's change in tune, that he is somewhat capricious in his nature, because we've sort of gone from a situation where we did get quickly down into the depths of despair, and then we're kind of back where we belong, maybe, in our natural state. I guess it's a case of, you know, what next? What's going to happen next?
I've got that Joe Cocker song in my head when you said that.
Which one? Up where we belong.
Yes.
Right.
You won't serenade me with
that.
No,
I will not serenade you with that.
Oh, well. Yes, I agree. I was listening while I had the Joe Cocker song in my head. It's certainly a big turnaround. And at this point, we had our individual follow-up sessions with Alicia Matteo, and the final step would be to come together and just debrief the whole intensive experience, clarify anything, and then be complete. And so it seemed like we were going along swimmingly well.
Home and dry.
Exactly. So at this point, we were just in the scheduling phase of figuring out when to set up that final group session. And Alicia's work required her to do some travel, and the scheduling took longer than normal rather than, you know, a couple of weeks. We hadn't got anything on the books. And then about a month after that conversation that you just had with Matteo, where he's saying that, I get this email from Alicia.
Dun, 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 dun.
Hey, Rohini, I don't really know how to write you this email, as I'm not sure if Matteo has spoken to Angus. On Friday, he came home and very calmly told me he didn't want to renew our lease together and didn't want to continue forward with me, which was hard for him to do since we hadn't been in turmoil. His words. He proceeded to completely move out on Saturday, and I've been an emotional wreck ever since. He gave me a ton of mixed reasons that I can't really tell what is real and what isn't. Seems like he finally made the decision of wanting for us to be over forever, which I deep down believe is a huge mistake on his part. It completely pains me to tell you all of this, as I truly, from the bottom of my heart, appreciate all the work and effort you and Angus attempted to do for us. I will forever be grateful to you both. I'm so sorry this didn't work out, and it kills me to even say that. I hope for his sake he finds the happiness he seeks. I know for me, once I can get out of this depressed time, that I will be okay. I'm sorry to give you this news. It pains me more than you can ever know. I haven't been able to stop crying or eat since Friday afternoon, as this is the most brutal thing I've ever gone through. Thank you for all the love and support you've shown me, Alicia.
My goodness me. It's been quite the roller coaster ride. I mean, my goodness, it's been for us a roller coaster ride, but for her and for them and for her in particular, obviously, she's really suffering at this point. And to feel like everything was so beautifully back on track. And then I think as Matteo said earlier on in the podcast, how she jumps the track. That must feel like a significant derailment. And I can only imagine what she's going through at this point. Devastation, really.
Yeah, so we, instead of having the group session, I continue working with Alicia, and Mateo goes AWOL for a period of time. And there is still more to be revealed.
There is. So listen to this space. It doesn't sound quite right, listen to this space, does it? Does it work? One would watch this space if one was in commercial television. But in commercial radio, would you listen to this space? Would you listen for the quiet? What would you listen for? Because you can't go looking for it. Can you go listening for it?
You become mad.
Maybe.
What's happened to you?
I don't know. I'm experiencing a certain amount of befuddlement around this idea of listening to this space.
So you would say watch this space.
You'd say watch this space if you're in commercial television.
Right.
I imagine you would.
I don't know.
I've heard people say that, commercial television.
I don't think people say listen to this space.
They just say listen.
Maybe we should just say listen to next week's episode.
Would they say listen and you might hear something new?
How much more have you got?
Well, that's it. Listen and you might hear something new.
Okay, I will.
Okay. Well, that's all I got.
And don't forget, if you would like to have your questions answered in the Ask Anything episodes, please send them in. You can email them to info@therewilders.org, or you can call 424-272-6497. That's 424-272-6497. Thank you so much for listening to Rewilding Love. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know by subscribing on iTunes, and we would love for you to leave a review there.
iTunes reviews will steer people to this podcast who need help with their relationships.
If you would like to learn more about our work and our online rewilding community, please visit our website, therewilders.org.
Thanks for listening. Join us next week.